Good afternoon, Jousy. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you, Philip.
Philip. It's not often I get called Philip.
Sunday, though, isn't it?
It is Sunday, yeah. Horrible Sunday. Horrible, horrible, rainy Sunday. We'll get snow soon here.
Yeah. Just like Manchester.
Yeah.
Always raining.
Yeah.
Suits the ginger, though.
Yeah. Yeah. No sun.
Yeah.
Philip, it's interesting. Grandmother only ever called me Philip when I was in trouble.
Yeah.
So whenever I hear Philip,
you just have bad thoughts.
I think, oh.
Feel guilty.
What has he done? What's my brother done and blame me for now? Yeah.
I don't get called James by mum and wife.
Yeah. It's Christmas soon, buddy.
It is. Has been for the last 4 months.
Yeah, in the Jousy household.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christmas movie start in August.
Yeah. Decorations, when were they up?
I managed to put them off till bonfire night.
Yeah.
But she did want to put them up on Halloween.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's early, isn't it? Isn't there anything with traditions there or something? Is it where?
Yeah, she's throwing them out the window.
Okay.
It's just like the shops have got it, so now we've got it because she's Mrs. Christmas.
Next week's podcast is a Christmas special, actually, with Gemma.
Yeah.
That's a secret.
She's back.
Yeah, she's back. We've missed her.
We have.
What is she doing? Well, she's a busy girl, working hard, helping people. It's good to see. And from the new year, when the podcast start up again in the new year, then
the
trio returns, and that will be that. From then on, it'll be the three of us, which I'm looking forward to. Cool topic we got today.
Yeah, a very current topic. Oh, well, it was earlier in the year, especially.
Controversial topic, I think, especially where...
Well, it shouldn't be controversial.
Well, let's see what we think. Let's see where it goes. So we're discussing drugs in sport, the illegal variety.
Yeah.
And not the recreational illegal variety, the performance-enhancing variety. And we are having a discussion. There's not so much to learn. It's opinion-based. It's what you think, it's what I think. We might not agree, we might agree.
Yeah.
And I think we've been... It's something I'm asked all the time.
Yeah, especially in cycling.
Yeah, working inside cycling. Yeah. It's a question I'm often asked and often... often pressed on. So the easiest way to answer it and sort of come over is to do a podcast and get our views out there and initiate some discussion, perhaps.
Well, yeah. So let's... I suppose the thing with your sport is it's not been helped by its past.
It hasn't, no.
And the riders that came before it. So now it's just, well, they did it in the past. So they're all still dirty now. Or are they? Can you... what's...
I don't think so. I mean, of course you can't... We don't know the individual riders, what they're doing out there. We're not in their homes with them in the evenings. I mean, my riders, I am. I know what they're doing. But in terms of sitting with them every day, every minute of every day, we can't be sure. And that's the... Unfortunately, I mean, that's where Team Sky and Froome and the sort of pillars and the pioneers of our sport at the moment are trying to give as much access to them, to themselves, and trying to give as much access to their data and other things to try and discourage that.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, which is just how it should be. Of course it should be. Transparency is everything. I mean, there's so much to discuss, but I think what we are seeing now is we're seeing that the last many Tour de France have been the slowest. You know, we're seeing another type of bike racing.
Yeah.
You know, the characteristics of the Tour, if we use that as our prime example, as the sort of gold standard in for cycling, is the Tour, of course, and you're seeing slower Tours and you're seeing them race differently.
When you say race differently, in what way?
Well, the Tours of yesteryear were arguably more exciting. Not for me personally. I love the way the science behind the way Team Sky are racing now, and those that are sort of out there saying it's a boring way of racing, it's just because they're not haven't been smart enough to come up with a system to come against it now.
Yeah.
And I love sport, and I love a team that is clever enough to develop a system which is light years in front of everybody else.
Yeah.
And the other teams that just aren't clever enough to keep up, come up, sort of complain, which are boring and so on and so. But it's not boring, it's just that they're better than you at the moment. And
it's like Jose Mourinho in football.
Yes, he came in and just did something new and took over and just changed the game completely. And perhaps Pep Guardiola has also had a similar influence in football. And that's what Dave Brailsford of Sky has done. He's come in and said, let's rip the rule, we don't have to do it this way. This is more efficient, let's do that. And all the other, you know, the other teams, they can, you know, and teams have done, sit and complain about it and sit and moan and do it, or then get their scientists on it and sort it out. And it's been born out of necessity. I mean, it's a slower tour now. Sorry, to answer your question. It's a slower tour now. And in yesteryear, it was very attack. You'd see riders just attacking each other up mountains. So one would go and see if he'd get away, and then as soon as he was caught, another would go, and as soon as he was caught, another would go. And now what we see is two riders just riding side by side up a mountain.
Yeah.
And that's because they can't do the attacks. That's because you can, if you, they're not as fit, they don't have the lung capacity, don't have the blood volume, they don't have what they had 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, the classic sign that cycling is cleaner and cleaner and cleaner is the way they're racing. They can't do the things they used to be able to do. And, I mean, the data backs it up.
Yeah. How often are the guys tested? Are they tested after every race?
Yeah, I mean, there's what you call the podium testing. So pretty much, if you're anywhere near the top of the race, you'll be tested, plus your random testing, and that's in racing. But the most important system for me in drugs and illegal drugs in sport is the whereabouts system.
Yeah.
And they're, of course, they're all on the wider whereabouts system, which they should be.
What's the whereabouts system?
The whereabouts system is a system whereby you have to, you have a login.
Yeah.
Username, password, you log in, and you have to you have to be available for 1 hour every single day. So you can be anywhere you like. You don't have to stay at home, but you have to write in for that hour between 9 and 10, I am in that place with that address, and that's where I'll be. So, most athletes are clever enough, they do it between 5 and 6 in the morning when they know they're at home in bed.
Yeah.
So most athletes will just put a blank 14-day period of between 5 and 6 in the morning, I'm at home. It gets a little bit more complicated when they're away racing, but then they'll just have the hotel name of where they're racing or training camp, and then they'll just put in between 5 and 6 in the morning or 6 and 7 in the morning, I'm at that place.
So that's for randomised testing.
And I've been on training camp in Italy, and we get that. We all know what we're getting ready to go out in the morning. There's a bang on the door, and two testing officials come in and follow the cyclist around. And as soon as they walk through the door, they follow them.
Yeah.
So they never leave their side. They never do anything else. And then they go in, and then, of course, they do the testing. There was one period, one of my guys, he was tested. I think it was 3 weeks in a row. So when he opened the door, he just sort of said, "Oh, nice to see you. Nice to see you again." Coffee, sort of thing. He was sort of becoming friends. But they are tested a lot, and they should be. And the whereabouts system.
And that's an international testing system?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's not like your in-house government testing like we have in the UK?
No. Yeah. No. It's both.
Yeah.
You have your sort of national federation testing, and then you also have your world international testing, and you can be sprung on by either of them at any time, and really without a whereabouts system it doesn't work, because I mean we know you can be, say it as it is, cheating all winter and making incredible gains, and then if you're just being tested at events you can stop the sort of 14 days before.
Yeah,
and you'll never get caught, and you'll always get away with it, which is the problem with
CrossFit, for example.
For example, exactly.
Because it's that's the thing with CrossFit, because there's only that one stage of season, so everyone knows where the season begins, season ends. There is in-house, they do off-season testing, but that will only be for a select few of the athletes who are the most successful athletes. But obviously a lot of people enter the open because it's open to the CrossFit community worldwide, so you're going to have a varying number of people who can cheat the system. In the UK, it's for a lot of the top guys in the UK, it is less likely, because a lot of the guys that I know, they all register with Baller, the weightlifting association, because they all compete in Olympic weightlifting competitions, which means they're then liable for randomized drug testing all year round. So if they're registered with that, and they're going to get tested, so if they are doing something, then they're going to get exposed when doing it. So they're going to be less likely to be on steroids or cycling the drugs.
Yeah. I mean that's one of the classic, when I say we've got statistical data for it, I mean, back sort of 15 years ago, cyclists were pushing anything up to sort of 6.7 watts per kilo over 45 minutes, and now the guys, they're not really over 6 watts per kilo. I mean, it's an incredible percentile fall off. So you know, if you ask me, is cycling clean? I'm not naive enough to think any sport in the world is clean. And to defend cycling a lot, I think the bad press has become because they've been so good at catching people. The testing processes and the anti-doping processes that now exist within cycling are so good and so proficient, they catch a lot of people. Where in other sports, I don't think it's less in other sports. I don't think doping. I don't think there's less or more doping in football, for example, than there is in cycling. I just think that they get caught in cycling. In cycling, the systems there are to catch them, and of course the incidences now in cycling are falling, have fallen drastically, and are falling even more. I still think that there should be a greater consequence on the team. As you know, Sky have that total 100% no doping, no doping policy, banned for life, you're out. And I think if there was, I think the teams could do more than they do, although they are doing a great job, and it's coming a long way forward. Can you see a system or a replicable system working for CrossFit going forward? Is there a way that could come into CrossFit? How would you manage that? Because of course, whereabout systems for everybody who does the open in the UK, just in the UK, for example, would be an incredible. But have they got a duty or responsibility to do that?
They should have.
But
the moment, obviously, it's an amateur sport. There's full time athletes that are sponsored at the top end, but that's only a handful of people that are able to are doing that. So it's not that blanket testing coming from CrossFit.
Take the top 100, for example?
Should be able to.
I mean, I would imagine the top 100 over the last 5 years hasn't changed a great deal. There's lots of ins and outs, but there must be a sort of 25-30% consistency.
There will be.
That you would say, okay, if you're in that 30-40% and you're the guys who are taking the guys' places. I mean, that's the most important thing for me, is that a guy who's cheating takes the place of a guy who's not cheating. That some kind of management system there, because if you're cheating and ending up 150th, then you're an idiot. I mean, you know, you deserve everything you get, to be honest. But the guy who's cheating and then taking the place of someone who's actually working quite hard, they're the people we need to find and catch, aren't they?
For sure. And the thing that, obviously, everyone has an opinion on it, and at the same time, what frustrates me, there was a picture of Michael Phelps doing his butterfly, and it showed Michael Phelps coming in taking gold and the person next to him staring at him. So looking over his shoulder, seeing Michael Phelps out in front. And the comment was, that people have put to it, was winners focus on winning, losers focus on winners. And
it's a great quote.
What seems to go hand in hand with that is people that aren't successful, aren't qualifying, turn round and point the finger at the people that are ahead of them and go, oh, well, yeah, he must be on drugs.
Yeah.
And it's like, and people are just calling people.
Yeah. With no...
With no backup, just for the fact that that person's out in front of them.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating, because it happens to guys that I work with, the whispers of, oh, he's probably doing this. And it's like, hang on a minute, and I know this person. And when you eat like him,
yeah,
sleep like him,
dedicated, yeah,
train like him, do everything that he's doing, dedicate the time to moving well, looking after your body, all those little small intricacies of performance, when you're doing all of that, then stick the question out there.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're just not good enough.
Yeah,
but everyone's just looking at other people, and that's actually probably part of the reason why they're not being successful, because they're too busy focusing on
what everybody else is doing.
Yeah. So that's what frustrates me with the thing. It's with the whole subject.
Yeah.
Is people just sitting back and calling people? As well.
Disrespectfully.
Yeah, disrespectfully. Yeah.
And I think that's all. That's all. But the problem is we have been let down so many times.
Yeah.
And that's often my point when I'm asked about the notorious. We don't need to name drop or we're hopefully clever enough that we don't need to start pointing fingers at people. But some of the notorious dopers from the forgotten era of cycling, the erased era, where no result, where we don't have any winners for anything.
Yeah.
And my biggest issue with them is they want to ruin their body and do that to their body and you know, use the excuse, well, everyone was doing it, so I was doing it. Which, I mean, we'll come to that later, but in itself is just a ridiculous philosophy and a ridiculous way to look at things. But it's not what they've done to themselves or even what they've done to the sport at that time. It's the lasting consequence of that, those actions on what's coming up now.
Yeah.
Is that nobody can win anymore without this cloud. Nobody can just have a good day. Nobody can just train hard, be honest, win, and then everybody say, well done. You know? And that's what they've ruined. Yeah. That's what they've ruined for me. That's my biggest issue with it. It's not because of what they did to themselves.
Yeah.
It's what they did to the future generations and what we you know, what I'm putting my guys through. You know, snow, 4 or 5 hours, smashing themselves, coming in, strength training, eating well, dedicating their lives to it, to then do well, to then be told, well, it's because you're on drugs.
Yeah.
Because you're a cyclist. The money that has been lost in the sport, when I first came into cycling, there was plenty of opportunities for young cyclists on what we call continental teams.
Yeah.
And there was enough money to go around, and the fashion was to have a small cycling team. The local businesses had a cycling team where they gave some money, and you could, as a cyclist, go down to your local bank, or you could go down to your sort of local supermarket even and say, look, can I have a few £100 or €500 towards a new wheel or something? And they would be willing to do it to support a local talent.
Yeah.
Because of what these guys did in the sport, and the name they gave the sport, we lost that from the sport. We lost that support. We lost that trust. And that's my issue with it. It's not necessarily that they ruined themselves. They're allowed to ruin themselves. That's their prerogative. That's their morals. You know, they go to bed in the evening and have to live with that themselves. It's the fact that they're selfish enough not to think about what the consequences of their actions are forward. And that takes a lot away from the love of sport.
Yeah,
sport is about people doing things above and beyond what they're capable of. The classic example is the Danish 50 meter swimmer here in Ilio. I don't know if you've heard about her.
No, go on.
2 months before, she went to the Olympics, she gave up. Had completely just gone cold in the head. Had decided that she wasn't going to swim anymore. Had given up.
Wow.
Was persuaded to go and just went with a smile on her face. Went there and there was an interview, it was in Danish of course, but there was an interview with her when she qualified from the semi-final in the fastest lane.
Yeah.
And the interview was, you know, you're so used to athletes that say, that have the you know, the press training, and they're so closed in the interview, don't get anything else. And the interview went over, and sort of, you know, the usual stupid question, how are you feeling? and she sort of said, I'm so proud of myself. I didn't, 2 months ago, I wasn't supposed to be swimming, and now I just swam, and I did so well, and I'm so happy, and this is just great. And and now my mum's not even here because she didn't think I was supposed to be here because I said I wasn't going, and now I'm swimming in the final, and it just can't get better. And then she jumps in the final, relaxed, wins the gold, and no one expected it. And that sport, that's the wonder of sport, but that's taken away from her by people who have, you know, ruined sporting's name in that respect. And that's my issue with it, is that you take away from what was just a wonderful, wonderful sporting day for a young lady.
That's what something you said in that sentence there about it takes away from their performance, takes away that magic and seeing what the body can do. And but people then turn around and say, oh yeah, but just imagine what the body could do if we let them hold up. But it contradicts itself, because the body can't do it.
That's why they can't do it.
That's why they can't do it. So it's not what the body can do, it's what the body can do on drugs.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people would be running these times. Then people say, oh yeah, but it's more exciting. It's like, well,
How is it?
It's like, just because it's faster. But yeah, it's faster, but it's not the truth.
No.
Like, you're sat there saying, oh, we'll see how fast you can get. Well, you're not as fast as that person anyway. So they're still the fastest person on the planet.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how quick that time is.
Yeah.
They're the best at it in the world.
Yeah.
It's a statement that baffles me.
I mean, I think the two things that drive me crazy on the doping argument is, well, everyone was doing it at that time, so it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you apply that to driving your car, well, everyone's speeding, so it's okay, I speed. And then when you do kill somebody, you say, well, I was speeding because everybody else speeds. I mean, it's not an argument that
is acceptable.
Acceptable, precipitates good behaviour.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because someone else does it, I do it.
Yeah.
It's not okay. And it isn't an excuse. And I would rather people just say that, made a mistake, got it wrong, I'm sorry. I think there's a big difference. So we often talk about, there's a big difference between a young 19-year-old guy, and this is the sort of the discussion we need to have as part of this podcast, is the British element or the British attitude towards doping. And it's simple: you get caught, it's a life ban. Where European and world doping agencies are, it's not a life ban, you get another chance.
Yeah.
And there, I think it needs to be taken case by case, because as a 19-year-old, I remember myself as an elite sportsman at 19 years old, and you walk into, I mean, when I walked into the fitness room at the rugby club there, I had posters on my wall of some of the guys that were in the gym with me.
Yeah.
These are my heroes, these are my idols, that I had all their autographs and their posters on my bedroom wall while I'm standing in the gym with them. And one of those guys comes over to me at 19 and says, take this, you'll be fine. I don't know that I would have done it. I hope didn't ever got the opportunity. I hope I would have been strong enough at that point to have said no.
Yeah.
But I could see why I might have said yes.
Yeah.
I could see the pressure that I was under there, and the pressure that potentially I could have been under. For me, there's a huge difference there than being the senior member that at the other end of that guy that would have, that potentially that was my hero, that Kate would have come over to us there. You know, the guy, the leaders on the team, the idols of the team, the stars, the people earning the money, etc., etc. When they're then doping, when they're then cheating, there's a big difference. There's an enormous difference. And I think there's a distinction for me between the 19-year-old, he deserves another chance. He deserves to be punished because he needs to learn the lesson. He needs to learn that that's not okay. You're not just ruining yourself. As I say, I don't care what you do to yourself. You're ruining it for others. But on the other side, the coaches, the sports directors that are then pushing it on the athletes, to say it as it is drug dealing. For me, I'd see it no worse than going out to a nightclub with a pocket full of cocaine and pushing it on kids. For me, it's the same. It's just as bad. It's just as dangerous for the body, and it's drug dealing. And for me, it should carry jail sentences. sports directors and coaches that are giving it and selling it to them should carry just as harsh a punishment as drug dealing in a nightclub should.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about the coaches that say, what was the quote now? If you fail a drugs test,
you're an idiot. Yeah.
It's just like passing an IQ test.
Miss the point, don't they?
Yeah.
Someone who doesn't understand sport. It's someone who just doesn't get sport and what sport's about.
It's so, I don't know, are we being naive in a sense of seeing what the whole bigger picture is? Like, is it us just sitting back and just all this is going on around us and we're the ones that are against all that, and then you've got people like that out there just saying these things and just basically downgrading sport, downgrading athletes. It just baffles me. Are we doing something wrong? Are we just, what are we doing?
Jassy's face has gone red.
The arms are in the air.
They're up, and there's frustration there. I, you know what? Maybe we're naive. Good.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Agree.
I'll be naive. I'll be okay. I won't ruin a sport for another next generation. And I will fight the corner. And I do believe in the giving people the respect for what they've done and their achievement, and innocent until proven guilty. And I will back up the Chris Froomes of the world.
Yeah.
You know. And I hope with all my heart, and I believe with all my heart, I won't be disappointed in him.
Yeah.
But people like him, I'll back them up to, and I'll be the one that's naive. That's fine. Call me naive. Call me an idiot. That's fine. But I can look my athletes in the eye. I can look my daughter in the eye, and I can look my wife in the eye, and they're not going to look at me in 20 years' time and say, my dad was a cheat. Because that's ultimately what happens. For me, that's the integrity of being able to look my kids, you know, my daughter in the eye, and fine, I'll be naive. That's okay for me.
How can your daughter, like, respect you?
Absolutely.
If all that comes out.
Absolutely.
Like, when is she going to stop listening to you? She'll just go, all right, dad, you cheated in life.
Yeah.
Like, you've lost me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to listen to anything you say now. Everything that you brought me up to do, you basically...
Yeah. Well, yeah, when she goes to school and punches someone, and I tell her off for punching someone, she said, well, everyone else was punching someone.
Yeah.
Well, carry on then. That's fine. No problem. So you mentioned naivety.
I think, yeah.
Now let's talk about where the line is.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Like, the coaches that accept it and are promoting it. Well, if promoting it's the right word, or just saying it's going on, so you're stupid if you're not on board. Or whatever that clown was saying in that article. Like, what does that say about you as a coach? Like, you've educated yourself in the science of sport, in the science of physiology. You've learned all these things, and you're applying all that knowledge to an athlete. Like, now, by adding drugs in the mix, you're taking away that achievement of the athlete and of your experience and knowledge. Like, you don't know whether you helped that athlete be the best that they were, be the best that they could be, or was it the drugs? Yeah. Did I understand their body well enough did I understand their recovery, their adaptation, their ability, their training plan, their nutrition, how they responded to all the elements of training? Did I understand them well enough, or was it just the drugs?
Yeah.
Like, it takes away your achievement as well. Absolutely. Like, your part in the plan. So you're just kind of downgrading your own achievements as well.
Yeah.
And why would you want to do that?
And so there's three levels in it. There's the young 19-year-old. There's the senior pro, and then there's the coach, and the severity of that goes that way. I mean, I've been for, I think, in cycling, the team should be punished. If one of your riders on your team is punished, the team gets a year ban. Yeah. He stops doping tomorrow. You know, ban the entire team. And you know, anyone on your team gets caught doping, the team, put the emphasis on the team.
Yeah.
You test them as well. Make sure your athletes aren't doing anything. Or fine the team, or whatever it is, the team punishment. I mean, for me, it doesn't need to be a life ban for the young kids, but it needs to be that we put a lot more responsibility and ownership on the coaches and on the people out there that are in charge of these athletes and are ultimately the biggest influence in their life.
Yeah.
I mean, for an elite athlete, you've got their parents, of course, but probably the person after that that's going to have the most influence on their life as a young age is going to be the coach that's pushing them.
Yeah.
And there's the ethical issue of being a role model. But where's the line? Where is the line? How close to the line are we willing to go? So a classic example is at the moment, it's very, very popular in cycling, especially in endurance sports, is we've got this exercise-induced asthma.
Yeah.
Which is a real thing, and there's a lot of riders who are suffering from it. The doses at which they're being prescribed asthma medicine comes under ethical question.
Right,
We're not saying anyone's doing anything wrong. I'm not saying
it's a medical
prescription.
Because
it's been medically prescribed, they've been tested, and it's been proven. But there are suddenly a lot of elite endurance athletes who have developed severe asthma that need medication to open up the lungs, to give them a greater lung capacity. We also have a lot of elite athletes, as you know, are in a lot of pain. They spend a lot of their time hurting. And at any point, I could take an MRI of an elite athlete and find several places of inflammation.
Yeah.
So anti-inflammatory drugs, painkilling drugs are the norm.
Yeah.
We're far ahead in cycling that you're not allowed to race 7 days after a painkilling injection. It's still in your body. You have to have a 7-day clearance after, which is great.
Yeah.
So that stopped that. But it hasn't stopped cyclists racing on tramadol, which is a grade just lower than morphine, for pain reduction, the asthma medicine there. So I mean, ethically, where is the line now? I mean, it's inside the laws.
The legal
doping, as it's called. They're inside the laws. They're not doing anything wrong. Ethically, asking an elite athlete, you're not allowed to drive a car on tramadol, for example.
But you're allowed
to ride a bike in a final at 75, 80 kilometres an hour. So there's for me, there's an ethical issue there as to how far are we willing to go as coaches to support our athletes or to help them. I mean, everyone else is doing it, so why aren't I? You know, discuss that. And the long-term effects of that.
Yeah.
The long-term effects of, I mean, it's very well documented, painkilling medicines and addictions to painkilling medicines and how they are. I mean, we're treading a dangerous path there. I mean, I think the use of seeing the use of painkilling medicines in racing and training and the level at which CrossFit athletes or cyclists are just popping painkillers to survive the day. Do we also have an ethical responsibility as a coach there?
Good question.
It's a very good question, isn't it?
Well, I can only speak for me and my athletes. Like, if my athlete's in pain, it's because I've done something wrong with the program. So I need to figure out what that is.
I'm just talking about pure muscle soreness here. I'm talking about
justify it with muscle soreness.
Well, no.
They
justify it by the fact that they're an elite athlete, they have inflammation at different places in their body. But the reason they're having it is because it helps them get through today.
Yeah.
Not because they're injured.
Yeah,
because it helps them get through today. Because it desensitizes pain.
Yeah.
I mean, where's the line?
Yeah.
How far do we go with it? How far do we take it? And you know, there's the philosophy. Well, it's inside the rules. We do it. We live on the edge. It's elite sport. We live on the edge. I mean, myself as a rugby player, I lived on the edge. The reason I don't, the reason when I get up in the morning, it takes me 10 minutes to get off my bed, is because of what I've put my body through. And I was on the edge. I wasn't intelligent enough to be on the edge chemically in terms of painkillers and stuff. But in terms of training, in terms of pushing, I live on the edge. Is that? I mean, I'm not even 40, and I could barely get out of bed.
But that's the thing.
I mean, where's the most ethical, moral element there?
Yeah. But that's the thing with the painkillers, then they're only going to be in a worse state.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
Because they don't even know how much it hurts, and you see that with the guys that just use steroids recreationally in a gym. Like, they've got all these aches and pains, then they come off the steroid, and then they lose, well, apart from losing all the muscular gains and the water loss and not happy, then they end up in pain, so they go back on the back on the steroids again,
so it becomes an addiction.
It becomes an addiction.
As the painkillers do. I mean, we're probably talking with the asthma medicine and the painkillers, probably talking about two different things there. I just wanted to draw attention to, there is the ethical issue of, I mean, it would be interesting to see, and it will happen at some point, the doctors that are prescribing the asthmatic medicines to the cyclist, that they will be at some point asked to justify it. And at some point they will be pulled in front of ethical committees and asked, is this okay? And there needs to be some kind of independent research done on that. And again, that's not accusing anybody at all. It's just facts. It's just that's the medical process, and it's how it should be. But in terms of painkillers, that's very well documented. I mean, you can buy, I mean, I can go, forget me as a coach, I can go as a person, just go and buy a paracetamol, ibuprofen from the supermarket, and no one can control my dosage. I can, you know, that I can do whatever I want there, and I can train and pain and train and live through the pain and just live off painkiller medicine and become addicted to them. So in that respect, if you can do it yourself, and you don't need your coach to do it, it's difficult to control it. It's very difficult to find out where the ethical, where the line is there. I've used a lot of time thinking about it, and my personal philosophy is, if I feel like it's something that will negatively impact the rest of their life, something that in 40 years time still is lying deep, either psychological or physically, in them, then that's where I'll draw the line as a coach. So asthmatic medicine, if my athlete was asthmatic and it gave us the edge, it's fine for me, depending on the dosage. In terms of painkillers, if they're hurting, of course we take painkillers, but if it reaches the point where I feel this could be addiction every day, then I'll try and pull my athlete off it. And I think also morally, I don't think they should be racing. I mean, standard painkillers we race on, but they shouldn't. Yeah. Certainly for me, if the ailment is serious enough that it requires tramadol, they shouldn't be racing. And hopefully the cycling or the sporting bodies will come in and do something about that at some point.
I think I'm with you. I agree, and I think the only time I'd probably advocate some of it would be on that competition day, if it's within the laws of the game, and that race hugely matters. It's the difference between
B races and A races.
B races, A races, winning the end of the championship, or something like that, like taking your title, but relying on it every week to come 150th in the world, you're an idiot.
Addictive nature.
It's like, why are you doing that to your body when you're getting your middle of the road, your average? You're doing nothing.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I guess we can't have a doping or a drugs in sport discussion without going a little bit political. We've talked a little bit about the governing bodies, and I've praised cycling. I think cycling is doing a great job. I think it gets the bad press because they're catching people, and long may that continue. And we've discussed that the for me, the idea of, we'll let everybody just take drugs and let's see what happens is because of purely because of the long term effects, because of the heart conditions, the problems we see, you know, people dropping down dead in the bodybuilding world of heart attacks after later on in life, because of it's just not an option. Both health and ethically, morally, is for me it's wrong. So when we could take it up a stage then, and we go and we talk about institutional doping, and we talk about Rio this year and Russia and how they were banned or not banned, or some were in, some were out, and all a bit of a mess really, and no real clear definitions and appeals and everything else, and personal people take it personally. I mean, for me, the national bodies have a responsibility to control doping within their own countries, and if you have 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, the Jamaica with the sprinters there being caught 3 or 4, again, as I say, with a cycling team, should be punished. We should be punishing the federations. Is that right, or do you have a different opinion?
Oh, we look at, like I say, the UK, it has such a in-house testing policy, so there's no question on it. Whereas if you're, they clearly knew it was going on, because how can so many fail?
Yeah.
Like, how can it be so big? Or they didn't know it was going on because they don't do the testing.
And that's even worse.
Exactly. They don't know it's going on because are they not doing testing? If they're not doing testing, like, they're not doing in-house testing. That's a choice, and that's effectively, by you ignoring it, you're, as the coach choosing to ignore, or the body the choosing to ignore that process, you're basically saying, okay, our eyes are closed. We don't know what's going on, so kind of go do what you want, and then we'll just go to the Olympics. Like, it's the same. Well, it's, I mean, not telling them to do it. Not telling them to do it is wrong, but then not having any testing to monitor it is the same thing. Like, you allow the same, you're either directly or indirectly allowing that process to happen. So
passively, it never stands up in a court of law. You know, you can't stand the court of law and says, well, I didn't know what the speed limit was, that's why I was driving at speed. Yeah. It's your responsibility to know what the speed limit is. And so, of course, it's the right decision. And more, a greater emphasis needs to be put on the governing bodies and the national bodies, because it is them ultimately that can control it. It's also the culture, and the culture of that sport, or the culture of that, of sport in that country, is so important. That, you know, that they just, yes, we've been criticised in the UK for being overly overly harsh on athletes that dope, but the kids coming through, they've got the message. It won't be tolerated. You will be banned, and you will have your sport taken away from you.
And we did all right at the Olympics, didn't we?
Yeah, we did do all right at the Olympics. We did very, very well at the Olympics with that system in place. But I think that's also, I mean, again, we're not on the inside in that respect.
So
we don't know what's going on, and we can't prove it. But they're winning with what seems to be a non-doping culture. So I mean, that all is, so that's great. I mean, that's how it should be. And having that almost fear in kids that that it won't be tolerated, it's not okay. So we agree with the decision to have the governing bodies and the cheats to have them banned. Are you for the life ban? Would you ban them forever, or would you take it case by case?
It would depend on the level. Like, if it's outright performance enhancing, as in steroid based, everything like that, like on those ethical sides, if there's those things that, where someone's taken a over-the-counter medicine that has the illegal substances in, whether that's known or obviously that's, finding that out is difficult. But if it was that scenario, then it'd be case by case. But if it was outright, I took steroids, I took EPO, growth hormone, Anavar, all these kind of things, drugs, performance enhancing agents, then that has to be life ban, because it's the gains you've made in training, it's the extra hours you've been able to put in.
But I mean, the ban that, almost that, serves.
Those things don't revert. Like, you've made those 1% gains, and those 1% gains have got you above everybody. And, like, we don't know where you'd be without them. So we don't know how much your body's kept all the gains that it got from them in the first place. So how can we ever see you performing on that stage again?
Or trust you.
And all those things.
So you're for a life ban is what I'm hearing. You're for...
For the proper performance-enhancing drugs, yeah, definitely.
So I mean, I think the biological passport is incredibly important. And having that passport is the key to future. And
how does the biological passport work?
It's basically a data score.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much what we do with the data analysis of our athletes. So they submit the data of the watts they're pushing and the speeds they're riding at and over what time, blood volume, VO2 max, heart rates, blood levels, different levels of hormones and different levels of substances within the blood, and they have a normal. Because, of course, what has been argued or can be argued in a court of law is that this person has a naturally high value of X or Y. And so...
Like the female runner with the testosterone.
Yes.
Naturally high testosterone levels.
So, I mean, you compare that to the average and you think, well, this person is cheating. Whereas if you have over 10 years or over 5 years testing and then suddenly it goes up by 15%, then you know something fishy is going on. So the biological passport is very, very important to have a constant.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's ultimately where things come from.
But could that be manipulated in a sense of how you manipulate training, rest, supplementation, the health of the athlete goes up, the markers gradually increase?
Yeah, but that would be fine. I mean, no, they wouldn't. I mean, no, not really. But you do see fluctuations in it.
Yeah.
And of course you will see that off-season versus on-season in peak form, blood values are sort of course very different. But not to the extent where you would clearly see a spike in that area. Clearly see a spike.
It'd be a significant spike rather than
a gradual improvement. And we you know, top pros probably are improving 1-2% per year as a standard, if they're at all improving year on year. And then suddenly an improvement of 10% in performance, and again, performance data we have and blood value data, we can compare the two. What is interesting is how that system has been developed and has begun to take away the sort of those coincidences you were talking about there, where someone's gone and had a steak and then claimed, "Well, I had too much steak that night," so it.
My hemoglobin went up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that, I mean, we've had those cases there, and funnily enough, the world believes it's possible for that to have happened with steak, and because technically in a court of law, through a loophole, it can't be proved that it wasn't a steak, the person runs free. It's another story. But so, I mean, the biological passport has been a crucial element of that. Could that be something that you could see at some point being implemented into the CrossFit world, is that they are sort of blood tested 4-5 times a year, have to submit data and scores, and you could track the biological passport? Could that be a way of solving the potential problem that's arising within CrossFit? Because
it would be possible. They just have to change how they applied the open, because the open would then have to be, right, actually not everyone can enter this now. Like, if you want to enter this, you're doing this seriously, you need to register as an athlete. Like, they need to register and be tested before the season begins.
But I mean, so you know if you've got a chance of qualifying, don't you? So you can say, look, you can tick a box that says, I'm doing the open because I want to see where I'm able to come, or I'm doing the open with an intention of qualifying for regionals. Yeah. And there you've probably got 150 that know the body well enough. So it's a manageable chunk of people where you say, right, that 150, I don't know who pays for that. That's something that, that probably CrossFit has a responsibility to find out.
Yeah, if it wants a sport to be clean, then the responsibilities for the sport.
Absolutely,
it comes from there. Absolutely. Yeah, that would be the thing. Obviously, then you just got the different levels because there's the different stages. You've got from the Open to regionals and regionals to the games. The games athletes have to be tested, all of them across the board,
all that, year round.
If you're that good.
Yeah.
You've got the guys at the level where regionals is their, that's their pinnacle. They want to go from open to regionals. And then
that's where it gets a little bit more difficult.
That's where it's going to be difficult because, like I say, now you've got an extra 1,000 people across the world that need to be tested. But where does the line go there? And that then becomes a grey area of, okay, well, people are doping to get just to regionals, and then they're happy that nothing's going to go after that, and they've achieved their goal, and they've got their T-shirt. Would that wouldn't stop that, and that would still make that a free-for-all, unless obviously they then actually they dope and then they qualify for the games without realizing that they were going to get that far, and then they get called out.
Yeah. Have we had any examples of athletes in CrossFit being caught yet?
Yeah, a few people have been caught.
Yeah, good. So the process is going. So credit to the organisation that are beginning their process, because it's important for the integrity.
Yeah.
Of the sport.
People fail.
That people are caught when they're cheating.
Yeah.
Good. Christmas special next week. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good finale for the year.
Dinner after.
Oh.
Christmas dinner after.
Rude not to.
Yes. Apparently Jim eats more than us too. She also trains a lot more than us too.
Yeah, we're just sat here talking.
Yeah. It was interesting today. It's a huge topic.
Morals and ethics.
It's a philosophy podcast really, wasn't it? And I hope we've
created thought
or also given our views on people asked for our views. People didn't want us to sit on the fence. They wanted us to say what we think, and I hope we've done that. Have a lovely Christmas to all the listeners out there. Thank you for following us. Thank you for your support. We appreciate it. Stay off the red wine. Can't promise it myself, but take it easy, guys.
Have a great year.